You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Ewan Murray.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show, reflecting on Matt Wallace's second win of the season at the BMW International Open.
Brilliant to win here in Germany, BMW, such a great event, and to play against the likes of Martin Keimer and the guys at the top there. It's a great field, so this is fantastic.
The Englishman won in front of a huge crowd at Golf Club Gutlachenhof, with most of them there to see if Martin Keimer could win for the first time in 4 years. But a misplaced putt on 17 meant he finished a shot shy of the winner.
You know, there was just a blackout at the wrong time. Obviously, it does happen in sport. It's a shame that it happened on my home turf. But you need to move on, you know. It was nothing difficult about that shot. I just screwed up and it is what it is.
Wallace wasn't the only English winner in Pulheim. Later in the show, we'll also be speaking exclusively with Aaron Rye about the hole-in-one which bagged him a brand new BMW. I'm Dan Roebuck and I'm pleased to say that today I'm joined by golf commentator and former pro Ewan Murray. Ewan, how are you?
I'm in good form. Good to be alongside you once again, Dan.
What a back nine for Matt Wallace yesterday, because there were so many players who could have won the events in Germany, and he came good to claim his third European Tour title. I don't want to say he was a journeyman previously, but he's had to work hard to get where he is. He's come through some minor tours and he deserves his moments in the sun recently.
No doubt whatsoever. You go into the final round and six players are sharing the lead. He was a couple off the lead. But, you know, when you manage five birdies in the last seven holes on a Sunday and you're in contention to start with, that usually gets the job done. And his third victory in just 39 events. So you're almost right about the journeyman. He has experience of other tours, but you know, when you think about it, 39 events and 3 wins. Some strike rate.
It's a good winter race ratio, so to speak, isn't it? It was an odd day on Sunday because the 3 previous days, the course played very differently. Was that the weather? Was it the conditions? Was it the pin placements? Why did we see such a switch on the Sunday?
I think it was very similar to the final day of the US Open. You put the pins in accessible places and the greens fairly receptive, and players of this quality will find them, and the scoring on Sunday was just sensational.
Torbjörn Olesen starts his round, can't be thinking, well, I've got a chance of winning this. He birdies the second, he eagles the third, and then goes off on a remarkable run on the back nine. He birdies the final 4 holes to shoot just the 11 under for the day, 9 under for the tournament, and he's finished before the leaders have started. What a curiosity that was. In all your time playing golf, commentating on golf, have you ever witnessed anything like that?
I have. Back in, I think I'm right in saying 1975, and it was the Kerrygold Classic in Ireland. Mm. And Tony Jacklin was out early on the final day. And the pilot, just before he got to America, informed him he had won because a gale force wind came up.
So he wasn't even at the course?
No, he was. Well, he was living in America then. He was playing on the PGA Tour, so he had come over as a star player to play in the Kerrygold. It was always a very popular event. And of course, he finished and no real chance of winning, but the wind was up 35, 40 miles an hour in the afternoon. And Tony was long gone. He was over the Bahamas by the time the pilot said, "I've got really good news for you."
From Olesen's point of view, I mean, your mindset's got to change. I saw some television interviews with him. He says, what do you do now? You've got an awful lot, long time to wait to see if you've won or you're needed for a playoff. It's an odd situation, isn't it?
Yeah, and very difficult for the player because of the length of time. Normally, you may have to wait 15 minutes. You may have to wait half an hour, let's say, to see if there's a playoff. And then you can prepare yourself. But to switch off for what would have been over 5 hours or around 5 hours and then have to switch back on, tremendously difficult for him, because a round of 61, he's obviously going to be pleased about that. He's going to reflect on that. But of course, it doesn't mean anything if he's going into a playoff. So a difficult situation for any professional golfer, but just a brilliant final round, an equal lowest round of the year.
Well, I'm pleased to say that we're now joined by the winner of the BMW International Open, Matt Wallace. Matt, congratulations. Strange day yesterday. What were your thoughts when you saw Torbjörn Olesen shoot 61 and post that clubhouse score of 9 under? It was a very, very strange situation to see him at the top of the leaderboard before a lot of the leaders had actually gone out.
Yeah, I think he was finished before those guys went off, so it was kind of strange to see. I first saw a scoreboard on the seventh hole. I was two under through three. And then I was like, oh, I'm not going to be too far away from the leaders. Maybe they're on six or seven. And then two of them was on nine under. And I was like, whoa, I'm four behind. So said to Dave up the seventh that we have to get to 10 under. There's no question about it. We have to do it. So we knuckled down and went after it and tried to make as many birdies as possible.
Does it make it easier because you've got that target? You know that 10 more likely is going to be right up there to win it, given the conditions and so on? Or was it just an odd situation?
I think just for the sheer fact that Tourbon shot that score, that everyone had to go and make birdies. There was just no questions about it. You just had to go and do it. So everyone was firing at pins. And that's why I think the score, it wasn't an easier day. Maybe the pins were a touch easier than the days before, but the wind was still up, the greens were still firm, and the rough was still thick. So I just think with him doing that, it was different mindset for people to go out there and just commit to their shots and take shots on. So probably thankful to him that I made a few more positive decisions than I would have done and went after it.
Matt, a remarkable run you've had, 39 European Tour events and already three victories there. It hasn't always been easy. You've played on various tours. Tell us what it was like playing on tours, like the Alps tours, and what did you learn from it?
The reason I went to the Alps tour is because it taught you how to travel. It taught you how to take your game outside of the UK, which is exactly what you do on the European Tour. So I always had my goals and my sights set on learning how to get to the European Tour and do all that. So I worked hard. I wasn't exactly seeing anything for 2 or 3 years. And I was at a point where I actually was sending off CVs to management companies asking for a job. I actually sent one off to Chubby at ISM as well, asking for a job about my third year into playing professional golf. So there were ups and downs, and luckily I didn't get an email back from them. And a lot of my friends were saying, you've got to just keep going. And I spoke to my uncle at that time. He's high in business, and he was like, when we're working hard and nothing goes right, we just change someone in our team. So I changed my coach, and I went to a guy called Matt Belsham, who coaches Alex Noren and other people on tour. And he really helped me on my swing, which got me the start to winning six times on the Alps Tour. And as a lot of people tell me, winning breeds winning. You know, you get that knack. And I've always been wanting to win at everything I've done, every sporting aspect that I've done. So I don't shy away from the moment. I like to be in that situation. And luckily for me, it's worked out three times on the European Tour.
Just one final one before we let you go. What is next for Matt Wallace? Because you're inching towards Ryder Cup qualification, potentially. You've got some big events coming up that you're entered for over the course of the summer. Where are we going to see you? How do you think you're going to do? What's your ambition now?
All I'm seeing right now is the range at the French Open here this week. I need to prepare as well as possible for this event. It's a big event for me. It's a big event for a lot of the players here hoping to get into the Ryder Cup, because obviously the Ryder Cup's going to be here later this year. So I'm going to do as much prep as I possibly can to be ready for this week, and going to take each week as it comes. I've added a couple of events into my schedule, like the USPGA and the Bridgestone, and now the Open as well. So we've got big events, but I mean, it's a great time to be playing some good golf, isn't it? So I'm ready for the challenge, and I'm looking forward to getting going.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing you play. We've really enjoyed you play on the European Tour over the course of this season, and we wish you well for the remainder
Thanks
of 2018
much,
and beyond. Thanks for joining us, Matt.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
As we've mentioned, it was Wallace's third European Tour victory in just his 39th appearance, but his first appearance at the BMW International Open, his second title of the season following the win at the Hero Indian Open back in March, and he moves up to 11th in the Race to Dubai rankings from 25th. Well, Tommy Fleetwood was quick to praise Matt on Twitter. He wrote, "Great stuff, Matt Wallace, on your second win this season. Your hard work doesn't go unnoticed." And by the way, Fleetwood is going to be one of those appearing in a brand new podcast from the European Tour called Life on Tour. The series features in-depth interviews with some of the great characters in golf. Episode 1 with Luke Donald is available now on Acast, and you can also subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone, so you'll get episode 2 this week automatically once it's published. Thomas Bjorn was another to applaud Wallace on the win. He tweeted, "Nice one, Matt Wallace. Another superb win. Strong performance to get past clubhouse lead set by that amazing round by Torbjørn Olesen. Big shout out to my three Danish friends in the top 10. Ewan will reveal who they were shortly. Before he does, let's hear from some of the others who finished high on the leaderboard in Pulheim. As I've mentioned, Martin Keimer, who helped draw in a huge crowd for the final day, was really hoping to secure his first win since 2014, but a bogey on the 17th hole ultimately meant his wait for a victory goes on.
You know, I would have loved to make birdie or par on 17 and then had that putt for a win or at least for a playoff. There was just a blackout at the wrong time. Obviously, it does happen in sport. It's a shame that it happened on my home turf, but you need to move on. You know, it was nothing difficult about that shot. I just screwed up and it is what it is. I don't need to change much, you know, a few things here and there, a bit of fine-tuning, but nothing crazy. And I think I can play really well. I proved it to myself the last 2-3 weeks I played. It's just that little bit extra is missing. You know, if you walk away with a par on 17, you have a chance to win the golf tournament. So overall, a lot of positives, and I look forward to a very busy summer now.
You were listing the achievements of Martin Keimer and suggested, look, this is a guy who doesn't crack under pressure. We remember the Ryder Cup. We know the fact that he's a dual major winner, but his game is not what it was. Why do you think that is? What's dropped off for him?
Well, I've said on here on a few occasions in the course of the last 2 years, there is a change in Keimer's swing since Chicago and since the two major victories in 10 and 14. His backswing is longer. I believe he has a piece at the end of his backswing he doesn't really require because it's something he has to recover. And I think that's a timing thing. That gives him a timing problem. Maybe his short irons would improve if he was a little tighter, a little shorter, and more connected on the way through. But I don't like criticising players who have achieved so much in their career as Martin has done. But that's been noticeable simply because I see him every time he plays. I don't think there's any change in his mental attitude. I think he's mentally as strong as he's always been. And he'll be back, there's no doubt. Still a young man.
Eighth in Italy, second in Germany. Seemingly, he's going in the right direction. In a share for second spot was Dane Torbjørn Olesen, who carded 61 early on Sunday, as we've talked about. Despite it not being enough for the win, he was just happy to finish on a high after a dip in round three.
I felt like, especially the first 2 days, I played really great, especially the second day. Was striking the ball fantastic and gave myself so many chances. And I had a bad day yesterday. I had a bad hole there in the start, and obviously that was very disappointing because I felt like I was playing so good. So, you know, I was just trying today just go out there and build up my game and see if I can shoot a good score and get ready for next week. But obviously as the round progressed, you know, I was keep on thinking birdies and trying to make the round better. And yeah, finishing with four birdies was pretty nice.
A quintuple bogey 8 on the par 3, fourth hole on Saturday. Take that out and he wins the event, but he's obviously playing very, very well.
I find it amazing. You go from one day to the other. Now, maybe you shouldn't find it amazing because anyone who's played this game understands it's never the same 2 days running. But on Sunday, he's very nearly a shot a hole better.
It's incredible, isn't it? Same golf course.
Same course, same player.
Speaking of Olesen, obviously a winner in Italy, he's had his time in the doldrums as well. A hugely talented player. Thomas Bjorn name-checked him earlier. Could he make the Ryder Cup, do you think?
I think anyone who's in position to do so now can. But as I said earlier, this is crunch time. This is where you need to find the form. With the extra points, the extra Ryder Cup points in these events, 3 Rolex Series events and a major, this is the time to be at the very top of your form. And I do think that Olesen could make it. I don't think he'd be out of place. I think he has a magnificent caddy alongside him, a chap I know well, Dominic Bott. I played a few rounds of golf with him, who's very keen for his man to do the right things, say the right things at the right time to him, known when to be quiet, which I think is also very important. But that, too, have made a really good combination over the course of the last year or so. So his good play doesn't surprise me.
The other player to finish tied second was Finland's Mikko Korhonen, who birdied 15, 16 and 17, but couldn't keep that run going on the final hole.
Great day. Especially the back nine, I was able to birdie a couple of holes in the end coming in and had a long chance on the 18th for tie the lead, but the second shot wasn't good enough. Tried to go for the pin and just pulled it a lot, so yeah.
Nice to see him keep up his form after winning just a couple of weeks ago. Wins have come late in his career. I don't think he's going to make the Ryder Cup, but having battled on the European Tour for a few years, I'm pleased that he's playing probably his best golf of his life at the moment.
That sometimes happens. You look at Matt Wallace, he's not a youngster. We get so used to young players coming through. Since Tiger Woods left college and came through at 19, we get used to players at 20, 21 and 22. But sometimes it takes others just a little longer to mature, to reach the very top of the form, feel comfortable in the surroundings they're in. And I suspect Mikko's one of them.
Well, as I mentioned at the start, Matt Wallace wasn't the only Englishman to win at Golf Club Goodlarkinoff. Aaron Rye finished tied fifth on 8 under, but on Friday, he made a hole-in-one at the par 3 16th, and we can speak to Aaron exclusively on the Race to Dubai show. First and foremost, Aaron, you've got to talk about the ace. Congratulations, and a BMW car that you won as well.
Thank you very much. Yeah, pretty awesome prize, eh? Obviously came out of nowhere, and you can't really expect to do that, so yeah, it was a pretty big bonus.
Describe the car, Aaron. What colour is it?
It's an orange BMW i8 Roadster.
It's a young man's car, then.
It certainly is.
So the ace at 16, part of a very good week for you. Did you see it coming? Has your game been bubbling away nicely?
The game has been pretty steady. Had a couple of weeks at home prior to last week, and yeah, it felt pretty good in practice. So it's hard to say that I expected it. But yeah, the game was feeling good going into it. And yeah, luckily it continued throughout the 4 days, really.
Now, I have to confess, Aaron, that I've tipped you to win events on this show over the course of this year because I've seen your numbers and I think, yeah, Aaron's playing pretty decent golf here, 9th in India, 12th in Spain. You seem to be a consistent performer, one that, you know, you can get on leaderboards, but you've just got to find that little bit more to win for the first time on tour.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you put yourself in those kind of positions on a number of occasions, you can take experiences from it on each occasion. So the more you put yourself up there, you'll learn bit by bit. And yeah, if you keep playing good stuff, if you keep making good decisions, staying disciplined, then yeah, you'll give yourself chances and hopefully it'll happen, but we'll see.
Consistent last week, Aaron, 269s, 271s and up into the top 70 of the Race to Dubai. So target top 60 at the end of the year?
You know, try not to set too many targets. Obviously, if that was to happen, that'd be fantastic. But yeah, I mean, try not to set too many goals and just try and take it week by week. But just try and be meticulous in preparation. Practice well, prepare well. It sounds very cliche, but I think it's so important to do. And if you are able to do that, then hopefully you can get the best out of each week. And then if you add those up come the end of the year, then you'll get what you get. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Speaking of week to week, obviously you're in France this week and you've won in France previously. You've won on the Challenge Tour. You've got some good numbers in France. How are you feeling going to play at Le Golf National?
Yeah, looking forward to it. Heard so many good reviews about the course as well. It's always a little bit mixed week on week. You get some people saying the course is great, some people not liking it so much. But I haven't heard a single bad word about Le Golf National, so really looking forward to playing that. Just arrived here now. So, yeah, hopefully going to get at least 9 holes in this afternoon. So, looking forward to it.
We wish you well in France and hopefully we will speak again soon. Thanks for coming on the show, Aaron.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
So, Ewan, we need the full top 10 from the BMW International Open.
There was a three-way tie for 9th place, Nacho Elvira and the improving Andy Sullivan. Johannesburg's Justin Walters joined them with a final round of 64. Søren Kjelsen shared 7th with much-travelled Australian Scott Hend. Lucas Bjerregaard and Aaron Rye were locked together on 280. That was in a tie for 5th place. Winner in Belgium, Kurt Honen was equal 2nd with Martin Keimer and Torbjørn. And Thomas was wrong. There was 3 Danes in the top 8. Let's get that spot on there. Matt Wallace, of course, makes it 2 wins this season. He's 3rd on tour, and the world right now is Matt's oyster.
On to last week's predictions, and remember, one selection has to be from outside of the top 50 from last year's Race to Dubai standings. I went for Justin Walters, who was tied 9th.
Very impressive.
Yes, thank you. Gets me 5 points. Marcus Schinnelt, less so, tied 59th, so don't get anything for that. So 5 points from me. Boxy went for Jacques Kruijswijk. -5 because he missed the cut, and Andy Sullivan, who managed to pick up a top 10 finish, so therefore 5 points. He did well, Boxy, with Sullivan, because his selections this year, you know, have been relegation fodder. I've got to say that. I don't want to throw him under the bus, but he's been poor.
Yes, I think him and I are going to have a six-pointer at the end of the season. I haven't been very good either. But I know why he picked Jacques Kruijswijk, because he's just learned how to pronounce his name.
Presenters are on 115, co-presenters on 30. He does do that, doesn't he, Boxy? In the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, Nick Borman is top of the overall global standings, while Rui de Brito got the most points last week. In the Race to Dubai Show Mini League, Jeremiah Lynch, who I know, incidentally, leads the way, but it's congratulations to Luke Taft, who got the most points from the BMW International Open with Matt Wallace as captain. Jeremiah putts cack-handed. He was a very good putter when we played as schoolboys a long, long time ago. I'm glad that he's leading our particular lead.
Matt Wallace as captain. That's fantastic.
I know. How do you pick him out?
We need to get him in here.
Whoever he is, we need to get him in for our predictions. Ewan, we need the top 10 in the Race to Dubai standings, please.
As we've said, Matt moves to just outside that top 10 in 11th place, alongside fellow two-time winner this year, Shubhanka Sharma, who occupies 10th place. Tyrrell Hatton in 9th, Alex Norton is 8th, and Rafael Cabrera-Bao, just a few weeks ahead of his Scottish defence, is in 7th, while Torbjörn's German heroics move him to within just a whisker of the top 5. Canadian Epi Banrat is 5th, McIlroy 4th, and last Rolex Series winner Francesco Molinari is 3rd. With Tommy Fleetwood's final round brilliance at Shinnecock, the gap has narrowed at the top. Masters champion Patrick Reed's lead has been trimmed to just over 300,000 points. So shaping up very nicely.
Ryder Cup situation next up. Obviously, we've got the European points and the world points. The European points, the four qualifiers, as it stands at the moment, Ewan.
Very impressive. Tyrrell Hatton, Justin Rose, Tommy Fleetwood and Francesco Molinari. You would want all of these four players on your side.
As regards the world points list, obviously there's going to be a little bit of doubling up, but who are the next four cabs off the rank, so to speak, who will get into the team as it stands right now from the world points list?
Yes, the four we mentioned, in actual fact, are inside the top six of the world points. But John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Alex Norton and Paul Casey would be added to that list. And what an opportunity Casey had last week in the United States at the Travelers to get maximum points there and edge his way ever closer.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a second. Just on the Ryder Cup, happy with how the team is shaping up at the moment?
I think Thomas Bjorn will be thrilled. And there's a lot of good players on the fringes as well. And as I say, things can change so quickly. I never really liked talking about the Ryder Cup until we get to now, the middle of June, because of this run of tournaments we have coming up in the next month. These players will have to play well to stay there, because there will be others who pile the pressure on them.
Now, in other news, and Ewan has just alluded to this, on the PGA Tour, England's Paul Casey couldn't maintain momentum on the final day of the Travellers Championship at TPC Highlands in Cromwell, Connecticut, which allowed Bubba Watson to claim a three-stroke victory with a 7-under par 63. Casey was 6 shots ahead of Watson going into the final day, but back-to-back bogeys on 16 and 17 were his undoing and ended up sharing second place. It was Watson's third win of the season, the third time that he's won the Travelers Championship, and he's now third in the FedEx Cup ranking.
This year has been outstanding. It's amazing what some good energy and some healthy energy will do. Coming into the final round, again, I was just trying to play for a position. I think I started the day 8th, maybe. So just trying to jockey for a position, just trying to have a good round and have a good finish. And then on the back 9, when I chipped in on 10, I made a putt on 12, I made a good putt on 13. Par putt on 14. And then when I made the putt on 15 is where I realized that I had a shot at it. You know, with the weather signs going up, I could see that the weather was going to come in, the wind started picking up. Knew it was going to be hard to make birdies. So I figured if there's a way I could get one more. And that's really what I did. I just hung on and had one on 18 to jump out there, and, you know, one shot lead, and made it tough on him to finish, or the other guys to finish as well.
Bubba Watson has turned his game around. 3 wins this season. Just a quick word on Bubba, first of all, because he slipped, 120, 130 in the world?
He's up to 13 now. That's how big the rise has been. The first victory over at Riviera, I was at there in the Genesis. And then, of course, he took out Kevin Kisner in the final of the Dell match play and now adds as you say, this Travellers Tour's very impressive list this year.
Is it an event that Casey really should have won, though, when he was 6 shots clear of Watson, he was 4 shots clear of the field. It's an event that we've seen players come from off the pace to win. There's a lot of birdieable, eagleable holes.
Yes.
But really, Paul's got to get the job done, hasn't he?
I would have thought so, especially having got his second stroke play victory in the earlier part of this year at the Valspar, having won the Houston in 09, a 4-shot lead going into the final round. For someone of his experience and quality, was quite a handsome lead.
On the Challenge Tour, 27-year-old David Law became the first home winner of the SSE Scottish Hydro Challenge hosted by McDonald Hotels and Resorts for 8 years after carding a 4-under-par final round of 67 in Aviemore to claim his maiden European Challenge Tour title. And some sad news to bring you. 5-time Open champion and one of Australia's greatest players, Peter Thomson, CBE, died last week at the age of 88. Thomson won 89 pro titles, was a course designer, author and chairman of the PGA of Australia for 32 years. One of the many to pay tribute to him last week was Gary Player.
I played a lot against him and around the world. One of the straightest hitters that I ever played against, as straight a hitter as I ever saw. And was had great course management. And his record proves it. Everybody knew he was a wonderful golfer, but to me, he was the most intelligent golfer of all golfers I ever played against. He was well-read. He ventured into politics and wasn't successful, but that's by the wayside. His dress code was immaculate. He was a man who contributed to golf and to society. And I admired the man.
5-time Open winner, fantastic player of the 50s and 60s, Ewan.
He certainly was. He had a great record also at the News of the World match play, which used to be held at Walton Heath, where the British Masters will be played this year. He made the game look simple and yet played it so elegantly, and that's the way he lived his life as well.
On to this week's events, and one that's always a highlight of the Race to Dubai calendar, but even more so this year because it's at the venue of this year's Ryder Cup, Le Golf National in Paris. It's the HNA Open de France, the third of 8 Rolex Series events on the European Tour calendar this season. Tommy Fleetwood is the reigning champion. Just about got home last year, didn't he, Ewan?
All very tight. It was quite an exciting final day because there was quite a few players who were outside the top 120 in the world ranking that were challenging for that. And, of course, a massive prize were $7 million total prize fund. Michael Lorenzo Vera was keeping everything going for the French galleries, and Peter Uhlein put in a strong finish as well. But in the end, Tommy was too strong for all of them, and the win was a slender one. It was just the one shot.
Le Golf National, of course, has been gearing up to host the Ryder Cup for a good few years. So this week, how is the course going to be set up? Is it going to be set up similar to the Ryder Cup or not at all? Will it resemble in terms of pin positions? And what can we gauge when we look forward to that Ryder Cup?
If they've had the same weather as we have in the United Kingdom, the course will be quite fast. It will have a link-style way of playing, pretty bouncy off the tee, and positioning off the tee will be very important to get at the pins for the second shots. By the time we get to the Ryder Cup in the end of September, of course, things could be so different. It's just too far apart. We're in the middle of the summer. It's been a hot summer, and who knows, we could get a wet autumn. So I don't think we should read too much into the conditions this week as to what to expect in September.
A lot of water around. You mentioned it was a second shot golf course. Potentially, what type of player, therefore, should we be focusing on in terms of a shortlist that might do well?
I don't think we can draw a shortlist for Le Golf National because it's so popular with the players. They like it. They've been going there for the best part of 2 decades and a bit more than that.
Sounds like you're just fudging your selections now, but continue.
Well, that's something I'm going to have to perfect, given my selections. But no, I think it's such a popular course that so many players look forward to playing it.
You seem to get different types of winners, don't you?
Yes, and you look at Graham McDowell, you wouldn't say Graham McDowell's a long hitter. You look at Lee Westwood, you look at Martin Kaymer, you look at Tommy Fleetwood. They're all different types of golfers, and I think that shows just how strong the course is. And designed by my favourite designer, Robert Von Hager, who's in his mid-80s now and resides over in Houston. Hubert Chesneau did the routing originally. And when you think this was an old rubbish tip and you look at what we have today, That's a remarkable achievement. And to get so many players to say, I really look forward to that week, means that the course is very high up on their priority list.
It can accommodate an awful lot of people as well. The players like it, the fans do as well. You get some great vantage points and some terrific holes.
Yes, and it's a natural amphitheatre on several of the holes, very similar to TPC at Sawgrass when that was built as a stadium course. I think this maybe happened by accident. I don't know if it was planned, simply with all the rubble that was piled there many years ago, just towards the end of the 80s, but the end product is quite beautiful for players and spectators.
In terms of the field, I was a little surprised not to see a few more Americans. I don't know if Jim Furyk has suggested to those that potentially will be in his Ryder Cup team, look, it might be worth your while trying to squeeze in, you know, the French Open on your schedule. I know it's difficult for golfers. They have a set thing, and if it's not on their radar, it's not going to be. But because it is a Ryder Cup year, we have got Justin Thomas playing. But are you surprised maybe a few more haven't come over?
Two ways of looking at that. Yes, I am. Because I think you want to familiarise yourself not just with the golf course, but the area as well. But what I said a few moments ago, this course will not resemble in September the way it plays this week. And I think maybe that was behind the thinking. And if I'm giving them an excuse, that's it. But I think if I was Jim Furyk, I would have liked more than one.
Decent field, though, from a European point of view. There's an awful lot of players that could end up on that team that will be playing. An awful lot of decent informed players as well. The likes of John Rahm is coming over. I know he's a European, but he's a PGA Tour professional. 10th last year. Rahm started the season on fire. He's dropped a little bit in terms of his quality, but he's such a powerful player. We can't rule him out this week.
Oh, for sure you can't. Whatever he plays... An amazing record he has since he turned professional of top five finishes. Quite astonishing. But there's other stars there, like Molinari and Norton, you mentioned a little earlier. So it's what you would expect in a Rolex series. It's a high-quality field, and Tyrrell Hatton will also be there, another player inside the world's top 25.
A word on Sergio Garcia. Doesn't tee it up in too many regular European Tour events, Rolex events, if you like. Great to see him in Paris this week, isn't it?
Yeah, great choice. And to play back-to-back, having played in Germany last week and Paris this week, and no doubt he could well be playing in Scotland. I haven't seen the list for that yet, but hopefully.
New father recently. Is his focus massively on the fairways at the moment, do you think, or not?
I should think so. He's probably happy to get out and get some sleep while he's playing in tournaments. But no, he's turned into a great dad, no doubt about that. And that youngster has great parents, that's for sure. Loving parents.
Alexander Levy, Frenchman going places. Can he make the Ryder Cup? What sort of chance this week?
16th, I think he is currently in the standings. He's the highest of the French players and the more likely, I think, to get that job done and push his way into, let's say, the top 12. Obviously, you have to be in the top 8 to be sure, but he's got the quality. He's also got the character, I think. And playing in front of his home fans, which we talked about earlier, whether that's difficult or easy, I think he's one that will relish it. And we saw Lorenzo Vera last year putting in a good performance. Maybe it's Levy's turn this year, but what a difference it would make if he was to go ahead and win.
Does Thomas Bjorn need a Frenchman in the side, or does it not matter?
I think overall, yes, you'd like a Frenchman to be in the side. If it went to Germany, you'd want Keimer. It's going to Italy, you'd want Molinari. When we were in Spain, we had Seve as captain there, and some of the great Spanish players we've had, the likes of Jimenez. So, yes, I think when an event of this size goes somewhere, you want a local in there. And Levy would be a really good choice. If he knocks on the door, I'm sure Thomas Bjorn will look at him.
We've also got the likes of Matt Fitzpatrick teeing up. And a word on Ian Poulter, winner, of course, on the PGA Tour, did brilliantly to get into the Masters after winning. Is he back to something like his best? And if he's not made the Ryder Cup team, either by the European points list or the world points list, does he get in any way? What are your thoughts on him as a pick?
I think you'd have to ask Thomas.
has he got to play well this week? Has he got to be just one place outside of those qualification places? Or can he be 5 out, 10 out? Where does he have to be to get into the team if he's not in it as of right?
Well, from Ian Poulter's point of view, he wants to be in the top 8. Simple as that. If he's not in the top 8, he wants to be in the top 12. If he's outside that top 12, then somebody, should he be picked, is going to be pushed aside. So I don't think Ian will be too worried about that. when you think he was, what, 200 in the world ranking before Brian Gay managed to get his wife to get the sums right on the PGA Tour and got his card back. He's now 28th in the world, Poulter. He's won over in Houston, his first 72-hole stroke play event. He's won the match play, of course, before on a couple of occasions. But I think Poulter's rise is as impressive as any. We talked about Bubba up to 13th from his lowly position last year. Well, Poulter was a long way below that, and he's only 15 behind Bubba now. He's in good shape, Poulter. He's done the right thing. He said he's going to come over to Europe and he's going to spend the summer here. You know why he's here for the summer, because he wants to be in Thomas's team in France.
Awful lot of good players teeing up, the likes of Rafa Cabrera-Bello as well, we've not mentioned. Shane Lowry is also playing. Russell Knox has come over as well from the States to play. I thought he might play a little bit better last week in the Travelers, but didn't. Lee Westwood's in the field as well, Søren Kjeldsen. Likewise, we're going down the list here. We need to get some selections, some predictions, Ewan, in terms of who you think might win this week. One player from outside of last year's Race to Dubai top 50, and one player, whoever you like, who are you going to go for?
Well, you know, I was very tempted to go for Poulter. Because if the fairways are firm, then length is not going to be a factor there. It's going to bring everyone closer together. But I'm going to go for Tyrrell Hatton.
Okay.
He had a dip in performance in the middle of the year, which he had. He had a very good US Open at Shinnecock, played some very good golf there, and very competent golf over the weekend. So I think he's out of that bottom curve and he's on the rise again. So
yeah, six at Shinnecock. And who is your outside of the top 50 man?
My outside is the world number two, Justin Thomas.
Well, now this is a bit of a steward's inquiry. First of all, let me go down the list of last year's top 50. I can't find Justin Thomas's name.
Well,
technically you're allowed.
Rules are rules.
Is he coming over just for a scouting report? Is he coming over to win? Does he always come over to win? As he had a little bit of a dip recently.
Minor dip. But I hope he's not coming over to miss the cup, which is my normal performance. My outsider.
You might have completely jinxed him this week.
I like that. My outsider's the world number two.
We'll have to check. I'm getting the nod that this is okay, that you can have Thomas. Okay, we'll let you have Justin Thomas this week. I'm going to go for Torbjørn Olesen, who's shown very good form recently. Played well in this event last year. And I'm actually going to go for a player that's outside the top 50. I'm going to, you know, adhere to the rules of the show, Ewan. And I'll go for Max Kiefer, who played well last week. Top 10 in the French Open in the last couple of years. A bit of a flyer. Maybe the pressure of playing with Martin Kramer on the last day in front of the home galleries on Sunday just frazzled his brain a little bit. So I'm hopeful for a better performance this week. He's a true outsider.
Well, you have been doing your homework.
He's a true
top
outside.
10 in France the last 2 years. Well, I'm very impressed with that.
Thank you very much.
I always play to the rules, and top 50, outside the top 50 of the 17 rankings, and I could not find Justin Thomas inside the top 50.
I can't believe you've managed to find Justin Thomas. That is your lot for now. Next week, we will review the H&A Open de France and look ahead to the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open hosted by the Rory Foundation, the next Rolex Series event. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat via europeantour.com or by downloading the official app. But for now, from Ewan Murray.
Thanks, Dan. Thoroughly enjoyed your company.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye, Justin Thomas, world number two outside the top 50. We'll see you next time.